Scuttlebutt, the official podcast of the National Museum of the Surface Navy in affiliation with the Surface Navy Association's Battleship Iowa chapter. And we are here in the Associated Foundation's Training Center aboard Battleship Iowa. I am Marianne Fengler, and I have none of the usual suspects with me today, but I have three of our other usual suspects. We've got the Richmond crew in the house today. So we're going to go around the room and introduce ourselves first off. And I'm going to start on my left over here.
I'm Angelo Salarpi.
I'm Alan Markle.
Electric Bill Weinberg.
All right. Well, welcome, guys. It's a pleasure to have you here. So my first question to you guys is, how did you get started with Iowa?
Well, Electric Bill went over because of an article in the Chronicle, I believe it was, and he toured the ship, and knowing that I'm a total history buff, said, you got to come over, and the battleship perfume got into my blood, and that was that.
And so this was back when?
January 2012.
January 2012. How about you, Electric Bill? When did you start?
So, yeah, about 2 weeks before Angelo started, I saw an article in the paper said, walk on a battleship for $15. And I said, well, that sounds like a deal. So I brought a couple of friends, and we walked around the only part you could walk around, which was just the foredeck around in front of turret one. And as I was leaving, there was a guy at the bottom with an Iowa jumpsuit on, you know, and radio. And I said, are you paid for this? He goes, no, I'm a volunteer. I've been a volunteer for my whole life. And I said, ooh, do you need an electrician? And he gets on his microphone and goes, Sue, can you come on down here? And so I met Sue Schmidt, who's our amazing volunteer coordinator. Yeah. And she signed me up. And I had to wait until they got shore power. And as soon as they had shore power, my job was to run around the ship and light up a compartment so people could work in it. Because otherwise it's black steel cave.
Yeah, that must have been quite the adventure.
Yeah, so I'd be like the second or third person in every compartment that people had to work in. It was, and wow. I got to know the ship intimately because I was everywhere on the ship.
So when you would go in and open a compartment initially, was it sort of like overpowering smell because it had been closed up so long?
Or? It was a great smell. I mean, I'd come home and my wife would go, get those clothes washed, you know, and I just wanted to have that smell always. If they had a battleship flavored scent thing for my car, I would have that.
So, Angelo, what did you do initially?
I was working with Bill because I'm a general contractor. He's an electrical contractor, and we would just team up and go into different spaces, like Bill said, and try to find the power, try to get the lights on.
And so that was January. The ship mm-hmm. left in May.
Yes.
And now you're down here in L.A.
Yes, we're down here in L.A.
From the Bay Area? You're all from the Bay Area.
Yes, we're all from the Bay Area, and we drive about 6 or 7 hours, and we come down and stay down here and do whatever task is needed. Everything from soundings to counting light bulbs, that's why there's LEDs in here, to climbing the stick mast and putting on brand new lights so that the airplanes don't hit the ship.
That's always nice. We don't like airplanes hitting the ship.
No. Neither do the airplanes.
No.
Right.
All right, so Alan, how did you get involved?
Well, Bill and Angelo are friends. Bill's wife actually works with me. And 2014, they were saying, oh, we're going to go down to the Iowa and work for a weekend. I said, really? I said, yeah. I said, you know, that was commissioned the year I was born. He says, that sounds like it'd be a lot of fun. Next thing I know, I'm hogtied and thrown in the back of Bill's truck, and we're driving down here. And that was 2014. Early 2014. It's been fun. It's been hard work.
Yep.
Really a lot of hard work. But it's just an unbelievable feeling to see something that was instrumental in helping end World War II to stay alive and to be part of history.
And I think one of the things that your presence here really says about this organization is, I mean, it's a great illustration of how special it is, because you're driving 6 hours to come sleep on the ship and do hard work here. And you've been doing it, most of you, well, you're almost at 10 years now too, Alan, but you guys have been doing it for more than 10 years.
Yeah.
What keeps you coming back?
It's the feeling of, first of all, it's fun. Mm-hmm. And the crew is amazing. Everybody that works here that I've dealt with has this generosity of spirit and fearlessness. I mean, I hear about, oh, we're going to do this, and I'm going, that's really hard, and then it's done. So the flexibility of the staff, of the leadership, and the willingness to take risks and to just try big things is magical to me. And the fact that you come down here and you meet all these people and everybody's like, oh, hey, this is great, let's have fun together. So as a volunteer, this is my favorite thing. I mean, I've done, you know, 40 years, 50 years of volunteering, and this is the one I look forward to the most.
Yeah, we also have that common ground of being fascinated by this ship, and it's a really great starting point for working together, creating all the relationships and everything else like that.
Yes.
So you guys were involved. When I started here, I kept hearing stories about Richmond and how amazing Richmond was. Have you got any favorite stories from up there? And Alan, I'll get to you too about your favorite, but I'd like to hear some of the Richmond stuff.
Well, it's not necessarily a work thing, but every Saturday, especially in the wardroom, all the crew would gather together and there'd be 40 to 75 people. And Mama Sue Schmidt would walk around and name every single person, even if it was their first day.
Nice.
And back then, we had some of the folks that we miss now that were our World War II crew. And they would sit together, and I would sit at the table and just keep my little mouth shut and listen to them tell their stories about being on the ship. Because I've been a history buff since I was in seventh grade, and I had a magical teacher that turned me into loving history, because true history is the stories of humanity. And so that's probably my favorite Richmond story, because I gave you the other one when we were on the mast.
Yeah, you did. What about you, Bill? You got anything good?
So
I've heard you. I've been threatened with the cable cutting story, I believe.
You're going to get it.
You got it.
Good, let's do it.
You got to do it.
It was Thursday before the tow was scheduled. So on Friday, we were supposed to be inspected by the Navy, the tow company, the insurance company, and somebody else.
Probably the Coast Guard.
Probably Coast Guard. And I was supposed to quit work at 4. It was about 3, and Mike was up in the XO's office. And I go, Mike, I got some time. Is there anything you want me to take care of? And he's like, are you kidding? He's like, oh, wait, there's this ugly black cable that runs all the way down the passageway and then dives down right out where Sue's office is now. And that's the old dehumidification power cable. So I just want you to take it out so it's not there anymore. I said, okay, fine. So I talked to Don Pomplin, who is the electrician on the
O'Brien.
Jeremiah O'Brien.
And said, tell me about this cable. And he says, well, it starts all the way in the back, what's now the paint locker. And I said, is it dead? And he goes, yeah, it's dead. And so I put my tester up next to it, and it registered as dead. So I get my big cutter, and I start cutting the thing. It's like a big pair of handcuffs. And the alarms start going off.
Oh, no.
And Mike Getcher runs into the wardroom, which is right next to there, and he looks at me and he says, what'd you do? And I said, well, I just cut this cable you told me to cut. And it was the main alarm cable. It had 100 pair of salt and pepper wires inside.
Oh, my God.
And it was about 1.5 and 2 inches in diameter. And God bless Ted Deppner and I. Somebody ran out to Radio Shack and got a whole bunch of butt splices. And we peeled that cable back. It was all sealed up and rubber encapsulated, and luckily there's a number every inch or 2 inches on each pair, so we just started in the section with pair number one and butt spliced them together and just kept going until we had a 200 butt splices.
Wow.
And meanwhile, that was the crew dinner. I mean, all the staff that that were up there was like, they wanted to go over to the boiler house and have lunch or dinner because it was the day before the tow. And so we just said, we got the ship, we'll finish up and we'll stay here till you get back. And so I had the whole ship to myself, me and Ted.
That's always an incredible feeling.
It was, yeah. If you want to see that splice now, it's down by the post office.
Good to know. I'll open that up and take a look.
It's still there.
So what was it like on the day the ship, I presume you were there the day the ship left?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that like?
Well, Sue had rented the Mazepeta, mm-hmm. which was a World War II yard tug. And so I think Angela and I helped disconnect the last mooring line.
Yes.
From Iowa?
From Iowa, from the shore. We were on the dock. And then the Mazepeta came bow up to the dock, and we all just jumped on board and followed her out past the Golden Gate. and then just kind of waved goodbye. I was like, oh, this is so sad.
Yeah.
It really was. It was quite heartbreaking. And I thought that was the last I'd ever see of her. And then John Goodson kept coming down here, and he kept reporting back about how things were not going that well, and then how things were turning around. And it's like, all right, well, let's come down. We were here for when we moved the ship.
Yes.
So we came down to the lay berth and then rowed her around to this berth.
Right, because she was over in the outer harbor and then came here. So you were there on the parade up the channel that day?
Oh, my God, yeah.
I got a story for you on that one.
Yeah, that's great. I was there, too. I just wasn't on Iowa.
You were on a mast somewhere?
I was up on the top yard on Irving Johnson.
Right.
Okay.
So
looking at us.
So the day that they brought us in, we had a big meeting in the wardroom. And, of course, Mike Getcher's got two radios on.
Of course.
And he gives us the whole lowdown. And we all kind of looked at each other and went, this is going to be a you-know-what show. So anyway, all the other volunteers were with the passengers on the 01 level, one level above the main deck, for those that don't know, and all the way up through the superstructure. Bill and I and this guy Stu, who was Richmond crew, and James Baca were on the main deck with Dan Pulowski, and we were the only ones on main deck.
Well,
for the tow.
Forward and aft.
They forward were all and aft. Center.
They were all kind of clustered
in the center, but we were on the main deck. So we when we left, we dropped the flag, and they raised the flag, and we went up underneath the captain's veranda there.
Mm-hmm.
And we all stepped back and folded the flag with pure military precision. And Baca snapped it under his arm. And, we marched off just for fun, and we got a big cheer. But we must have traversed fore to aft 10 times that day.
We were the flying squad.
Yeah.
If anything went wrong, we were the ones that were supposed to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were wearing, in July, long sleeve coveralls, and PFDs.
And helmets.
And helmets.
Yeah.
And I think they had supplies they had for everybody on board, 700 people on board, were drinks and cookies and maybe bags of chips.
Little bags of chips Famous Amos cookies and little teeny bottles of water.
Yeah.
And didn't you have porta potties too? Or did you not have anything on board?
No, those were on the dock.
Those were on the
pier.
Oh,
no.
So,
and that was a long day.
They brought us down the channel. We turned under the turning base, and they bring us over here to the berth 87. And it's taking time. It's taking time. And
all the VIPs.
All the VIPs are getting grumpy. And the guy in charge of actually when we can get off is moving us this way and moving us that way and doing this and doing that. And it's taken forever to tie us down. And so finally we get close to the tied up, and they take the old ACOM ladder that Chief Dave Mosier just put on the port side,
mm-hmm.
and we swing it out partway, and Dan Pulowski walks down the ACOM ladder and jumps about 10 feet down to the ground, and he gets the little stick, the great all, pulls it over, and then we lower it down, and they let off all the dignitaries and the mayor and the congressperson and the news people, and everybody else is stuck on board.
Oh.
And it's hot. And getting hotter. And we had, a couple people go down with the heat.
One person had the first person off was a heat frustration.
Stroke. Yeah.
Heat exhaustion, hopefully.
Yeah. Heat exhaustion. Yeah.
Heat stroke would be a really bad thing.
Yeah, heat exhaustion, for sure. But it was just, it was crazy.
It was a mess.
And the interesting thing is the photos I got last night that are actually in the disc, in the thumb drive I gave you, if you look at that section of photos, the sky around the ship is all yellow.
Wow. Were we having a fire that day or something?
I don't know what was going on, but somehow all those photos came out with the background was all yellow.
Because that was June.
Yeah, it was June.
It's not prime fire time, but
June, almost July.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were at the bottom of the brow handing out big challenge coins, like the first day of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They were
the tow challenge coins.
Oh, that's cool.
They were specially made.
So that's the only thing people got along with their crappy little snacks.
Okay, so Alan, when you first got here, what were your initial impressions?
Big gray lady. I'd never been that close to a Navy ship before. And it was just awe-inspiring. It's like I wanted to see everything. And as of now, I've been down to the double hull, up to the radar platform, thanks to these two guys, but not the stick mast. I had that opportunity, and I said, no.
I haven't done that yet either. We'll get there.
But it's, I mean, there's just something about it. It's warm. It's yeah, it's a cold steel box.
Mm-hmm.
But you get inside, and it's warm. Okay, and the crew makes it warm.
Yeah.
Makes it feel like home. So, and it's great. And then with these two, there's never a dull moment.
Oh, yeah. So what are some of your favorite stories?
Well, the one favorite story that I tell people, because it's hilarious, is we were tasked with taking lockers for the Lost at Sea when they destroyed everything. And, or not destroyed, but you know, knocked them all out. And they wanted all of the lockers to go down to, I think it was fifth deck,
mm-hmm.
and stored in the back, because this place has got a ton of storage. So the three of us had to move everything over, and then we had to drop it down through the open hatches. And then we had one set of lockers that was bigger than the final drop down. So the day before, we had climbed down, I don't remember where, but we went back in Mardek, and there was a line there. So Bill said, oh, I want you to go get that line, Alan. So I go there, and I start hauling it up, and it's tied off at the end. So I have to climb down two decks, unknot it, bring it up, go back up, and I start pulling it up again, and it fouls.
Of course.
So I go back down and free up the foul, go back up, start pulling it up again, and somebody had tied it off inside another space. So I had to go in that space and free it up, and this time I said, okay, now I'm coiling it up and bringing it up with me. And then I get to where they're lowering the stuff down, and they say, oh, we don't need that anymore, Alan. We just kind of like squeezed it through. So it's like, okay.
But yeah. Thanks a lot.
Right. So I can tell you all about the ladders on the ship and the ones to avoid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah.
So you had such a, Angelo and Bill, you had such a, I don't even know what the word is, that an incredible experience that doesn't quite cover it, but, you know, in Richmond. Obviously, it's different here.
Yes.
Do you still feel, what's the right way to put this?
Excited?
Yeah. Has it got the same excitement?
Yeah. Actually, because of the progress that's been happening here and really seeing the ship coming alive again, it's getting to be more and more fun. Richmond was a cowboy sprint, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of crazy stuff. There was, people had to go around and tie down chairs.
For the tow,
sure.
And make sure every single locker was zip-tied closed and just...
And some of the zip ties are still there.
Some of the zip ties are still
there.
Yeah. And, oh, another fun one on tow day. We took a watermelon and duct-taped it to a table in the wardroom, and it came all the way down here duct-taped to the table in the wardroom.
All right, so I want to know one other thing here. We have Jonathan, we have Mike, we have Sue, we have... David Canfield, obviously. We have Dave Way.
Yes.
They're all still here. They were all up there.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about what they were like then and what they're like now.
Sue is Sue, and Sue is wonderful, and she is the heart of this organization. And there's really something very special about her.
Aw.
That's true. Sue is the one that... As a volunteer coordinator, just completely shines in my eyes.
Yeah.
Someone that I would work for anywhere. She really cares about us. She really takes care of us. And she remembers so much of the stuff that I tell her that I sort of toss off. And she'll bring back to me like years later. It's like, oh, wow, you were really listening. Mike, you know, if Sue's the heart, he's the brain.
Yeah.
And he, you know... To hear him get into the weeds about almost everything that he talks about is wonderful because I learned so much from him. And then, David is more the philosopher of the ship.
That's a good way to put it.
Always has been. I think the second day I was aboard, Saturday, and we were trying to get the Dimension phone system working because he always really wanted to get that working. I don't think it still doesn't work. But we were down in the dimension room, and we stood in the on the passageway right on the right before we get to Broadway. Mm-hmm. And he starts telling me about his day in 1989 when the turret exploded, mm-hmm. and how he had never talked about that to anybody, and how he would wake up screaming and couldn't tell Tanya why he was screaming. And the fact that he cared enough to take care of himself to start talking about it, mm-hmm. to me was just like one of the most impressive feats of human accomplishment. He was really being extremely brave to do that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he's the philosopher. Jonathan, we hardly ever got to meet, because Jonathan was doing Jonathan stuff, which is like doing all the other stuff with fundraising and
getting the
networking
money
and making connections with all these companies that are our sponsors now. You know, I mean, he was huge, first of all. I mean, he was probably twice the size he is now.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
And so we hardly ever spent any time with him.
I've heard stories of Dave Way watching like Korean sitcoms or something like that in the wardroom in the evening, because that was the only thing you could get on the wardroom TV. Were you guys around for that?
No, we only got...
No. David Canfield talked about how much money he was spending out of his own pocket for the internet and how much of it was porn.
Okay, we're not going there, but
no,
anyway.
Right. You can edit that out.
So when you guys come down, you stay on board the ship.
Yes.
What is that like for you?
It's boy camp. It's boy camp.
But it's also change.
Yeah, talk
from
about
when we first came down till now. When we first came down, there were porta potties on the deck, mm-hmm. and no showers. If you want to take a shower, you have to go down to
the yacht club.
The yacht club to shower, which was good in one sense and bad in one sense. It was good because they had Everflow water. You mm-hmm. turn it on, it stayed on.
Yeah.
Here we now have showers, which are great. We have heads, which are great. But the showers have a button. You know, press it in, it's on. Take your hand off, it stops. Mm-hmm. So you learn about Navy showers.
Navy showers, yeah.
And then the other thing is it's just... there's something about staying on the... First of all, you get the smell. But there's something about staying on the ship that's just cuddling.
And, well, for myself, you know... Oh, we found all the best restaurants in San Pedro. But anyway...
Yeah. And there are a lot of good ones.
There's a lot of good ones. But we'll come back and we sit on the pier for a while and have some conversations. Then pretty much everybody goes to bed, and I tend to wander. So I have myriads of pictures from going all the way up to the bow at 10:30, 9:30, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, up to the 05. Sometimes I'll go to 011 at like 7:30, 8 o'clock in the evening, and just when you're going all the way up there and you're looking fore and aft and out of the town and across the shipping containers, shipping containers not so much, but it's still, there's something about it, and there's something about the scale of everything here. Because when you go in the engine rooms, water intake's like bigger than you could reach around.
Yeah.
You know, everything's huge.
Yeah.
And the other thing is for me is this engineering. This was human beings and slide rules.
Yeah.
People remember, this was not a computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are things that we couldn't do today.
Many things we couldn't do today.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for stopping by. Anybody got any last words? That's not the right word. Anyone, last things you'd like to share?
I'd like to tell a story of someone who's not with us anymore. There's a Richmond reunion once a year, and everyone comes up. Sue comes up, and Sue stays at my house. And one year she said, "Oh, well, we've got a World War II vet. Can he stay with us?" And I said, "Yeah, no problem." So we go to the reunion. Everything is fun. And then we always have a Sunday brunch. It's the three of us and Sue and whoever shows up. And I can't remember his name.
John Wolfenberg.
Yeah, John Wolfenberg. And John starts telling a story. He was on the Iowa in World War II in Tokyo Bay, and how he and a buddy figured we could make some money. They buy a couple boxes of Hershey's and take it to town. They're going to sell them.
Yeah.
And they're walking up the street, and a woman is there with two kids, and she puts the kids behind her, and he said she's just standing there shaking because they've been told the Americans will kill you on sight.
Yeah.
And he's telling the story, and he's crying. And as he starts, you know, crying and telling the story, we start crying.
Yep.
Yep.
And it was such an incredibly moving experience. He and his buddy then went back to the ship and basically bought every box of chocolate on the ship and went back to Tokyo the next day and just started handing them out free.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and that example of a crew member is the example of what it's like to people working on this ship.
Yeah, that's a perfect example.
Yeah, it really is. And there's just something that, you know, draws us back.
That's the perfect spot to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to sit in here and talk to us.
Our pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get you out there and let people meet the legends.
The Three Musketeers.
Yep, exactly. Three Musketeers. All right. So thank you very much for tuning into Scuttlebutt again. If you have any questions, comments, feedback, topic you'd like us to discuss, please shoot it to us at podcast@labattleship.com. And since Canfield's not in the room today, we're going to use his favorite podcast@labattleship.com. And hopefully we'll get the other guys back in here soon to talk. But thank you so much for being here. And thank you all for listening.